Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Okay, before we go into this awesome interview, it's truly such a good one. I just have to talk about, we've been talking this whole month about just press play. Now, this is something we really want to encourage people to do because once you just press that play button, you just try it out, you never know what can happen. And recently we had someone tell us they've been checking out some of the videos on Gen Health. They should have done it a long time ago. Because they're like, oh, they're actually very good. Like, that's the point. If you've been telling me you're having an achy, weird shoulder thing, your knee's been bothering you, your low back has always been achy or not good after workouts, like, this is what we do in Gen Health. We help your body to find that freedom. And all it takes is just getting started. Just press play. Just explore a free week trial. Just see what is possible. Even if you're like, I feel like I've seen those exercises before, just press play. Because I'm telling you, you might hear it done in a new way. You might learn something about your body you never knew. And when you add these in the order that I provided them in the plans, 5 to 15 minutes a day, you'll be surprised. And I'm telling you, you just press play. If you just give yourself that opportunity to check it out. And of course, as a podcast listener, if you decide to stay beyond those 7-day free trial, you can always use code OPTIMAL at checkout and you get your first month for just $20. $20 to explore 12 different plans. $20 to explore the Discover section. Over 300 videos that you can explore and just type into a search bar. Or come attend a free live webinar within our Gen Health membership and see what it's about. See what this community, this accountability, this access to plans that keep track of your progress and can be addressed on any part of the body. Just see what can happen when you just press play.
So excited to share this next interview with you because we have an expert in women's health who's going to talk about hormone replacement therapy as well as touching on GLP-1 use. Jennifer Galarson is a nationally respected expert in women's midlife health, functional and integrative medicine, longevity science, and natural aesthetic enhancement. She practices at the Osteopathic Center for Healing, a concierge-level medical practice known for deeply personalized, elevated care. A board-certified physician assistant with over 20 years of clinical experience, Jennifer is among fewer than 2,000 clinicians worldwide to hold the prestigious Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner designation. She trained at the University of Virginia, the University of Maryland, Baltimore, and the George Washington University. Jennifer specializes in guiding women through perimenopause, menopause, and complex chronic concerns using advanced, individualized, science-backed strategies. She is known for translating complex hormonal and biochemical science into clear, actionable guidance women can immediately apply. This interview is seriously chock full of absolute pearls and gems. So let's get into it.
Jennifer, thank you so much for taking time to be here. I know everything you talk about is one. I think it's becoming more of a prevalent topic. A lot of people are starting to open their eyes, gain more awareness of what is perimenopause? What does this mean? How can I take care of myself? But I also think there's a lot of confusion, right? And so being able to have a practitioner on, a clinician who actually works with people in this capacity and prescribes a lot of the tools to help people is going to be really beneficial. So I just appreciate you being here.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I love talking and educating people and listening and making things real for people, approachable.
Yeah.
So for people who aren't familiar with what you do, who you are, can you just talk a little bit about yourself and what made you want to go into this field of hormonal health and menopause and women's health in general?
So, you know, best laid plans, sometimes your career finds you, as you guys know. So I joined a practice, and I was blessed to be with three amazing women who owned a med spa. I had a background in family practice, oncology, and then I worked in a med spa. And the owner, an amazing physician, a trendsetter, she started going through menopause and started screaming at people and didn't realize what was going on. Wow. And said, wow, I guess this is menopause. I need to do something about this. So she was her first patient, and we, you know, did some education, and we started treating women in our community. And this was back in 2009, 2010. So we were quietly doing this because a lot of our colleagues were, this is dangerous. You're going to hurt them. You're going to give them breast cancer, you know, all the things that have been dispelled. We got women really good, but not great. And there was just a key component missing. So that drove us into this functional space where we're looking at the whole body. We're looking at their sleep and their diet and their movement and their stress and their relationships and really fixing that groundwork for them so that the hormones work. So that's sort of where I got started. And I've been doing it for 15 plus years. I moved my practice to where I am now in Rockville, Maryland, outside of DC, and there was just sort of a gap in care. I started my practice right in November of 19, so we all know what happened right around the corner. I had had my first open house. It was well attended. I was introducing myself back to the community because I've grown up here my whole life, and then boom, everything shut down. But one of the things that happened was people started talking, and a great study came back looking at the Women's Health Initiative. We sort of changed the way we were thinking, and then this momentum has started. So I was sort of the only one in the area that was doing it, and I, you know, reached out and did some local movies about the menopause movie and just started meeting people. And I guess they just think that I can, I like talking about it, and now this is where I am. So, and I'm hoping to help people outside of my small community here.
Okay, I have to interrupt because this is the perfect time to remind you about Needed. Now, this is a company that came into my life when I was trying to conceive, all the way from pregnancy and then into postpartum. However, I've continued to be such a believer in what they do and the products that they provide because, especially as women who don't want to just survive, but actually want to feel like we're thriving in our bodies, this is what Needed does. They dose at the clinical levels, not just at the bare minimum. And I've recently come on to really focus on omega-3 because I've talked about a little bit how I want to do some body recomposition this year. And I learned that taking a solid omega-3 that is actually clinically dosed alongside a consistent workout plan can help you lose more fat and build more muscle than those who don't take it. Furthermore, it can help improve memory, reaction time, attention, and even slow down brain aging, which I think we can all agree on that is a great addition to our lives. So if you have not checked out a brand that you can really trust that is actually clinically dosed, I would highly recommend checking out Needed. All you have to do is head to thisisneeded.com, use code OPTIMAL to get 20% off your first order. That's thisisneeded.com and use code OPTIMAL to get 20% off your first order.
That's awesome. I mean, I love the real authentic, you know, introduction to it and how you've really blended into this space to help your community so much, and then obviously more people by being able to speak about it. So that's awesome. You know, when so many women, I think, do feel dismissed or confused about their symptoms or what they're feeling within their body, can you just kind of highlight, like, what are some of the most common things that women say when they first come in when they're feeling disconnected in their body?
So we have a unique practice. We have the opportunity to spend consultation is 90 minutes. So you get to really know them very, very well. They have usually seen between 2 to 10 different people by the time they get to us. So I get to validate. I get to understand what they're saying, and they finally feel like, okay, fine, now I'm going to unload everything. But the common one, some of the common things I hear are, something's wrong, but all my tests are normal. I mean, I hear that all the time. I know something's wrong. I don't want to take the medicines that they gave me, but there has to be something else. Or I tried traditional things and nothing's working. I don't feel like myself. I used to be able to do everything and now I can't. I'm yelling at my partner. I'm yelling at my kids and I don't know why. I'm unmotivated. I feel worried at work that I'm not doing a good job. And what the heck is this thing on my belly? Like, what's this belly fat? So those are very, very common, very, very real complaints for which they haven't been given a good answer. And sometimes, and I don't blame my colleagues because I wasn't in traditional, you know, my physician assistant program, we didn't learn any of this. And I think that's coming out more and more. We just didn't learn any of this. The nutrition was lacking. The understanding, compassion, and even like trauma-informed care, we're sort of starting to get that. But yeah, holistically, I think we missed the boat on that. I'm blessed to have work with an osteopath. So he is sort of rooted in that whole body medicine. But that functional degree that I got really did help, of which my people are coming around now, but most of my colleagues thought I was weird and that's okay.
And that's the
on them now, right?
Totally. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing that I think that a lot of the things you listed off and just how we as professionals and practitioners interact and communicate with patients has changed so much in the last 20 years, where it used to just be, you speak at the person rather than understanding, hey, how we talk to people matters and how we tell them what's going on in their body matters based on what they start to think about their body. But when somebody comes in like this and they've already been told by, like you said, 2 to 10 practitioners that everything's normal, you're just getting older, your labs are normal, where do you start with somebody? How do you start to educate them in a way that puts them at ease and get them on the right path?
I think one of the tools is, you know, sort of telling them their story back to them and making them heard, and then maybe explaining why. There's a lot of, oh, do you realize that your first autoimmune diagnosis was after your first child? And that was like a really stressful time in your life. And then did you notice, like, with your second one, then you had Hashimoto's, and then you started having GI symptoms, and then, you know, you're more constipated, like just sort of retelling the story and sort of connecting the dots, and then telling them it's not really their fault, and then explaining and maybe even taking those normal labs and say, yes, this is normal, but what's optimal? What's going to make you feel better? Yes, this is normal. And yes, everything you're feeling is normal, but we can do things to help. And then we start with those fundamentals, which those are hard things. Changing your diet, changing your sleep routine, changing the way you speak to your partner or your friendships, or making your circle closer. So some of those fundamental things sort of feel unsurmountable if you are already unmotivated. So sometimes giving them a little bit of hope and maybe starting them on some supplements right away, and then bringing in, for me, a lot of times it's hormone replacement or giving them things to help their libido, or, you know, just giving them a little bit of a help, but then giving them the time and the motivation and the help, like health coaches or nutritionists or pelvic floor therapists or a great therapist, just to be able to how to communicate. Maybe it's couples therapy. So giving them the options and listening. And I don't fault my colleagues because they have 8 minutes. Yeah. How do you fix someone with all these problems that they don't even know what it is in 8 minutes? It's difficult.
Totally. Or that's not even enough time to really hear someone's story and understand where you need to point them in the right direction. I mean, I love that you're talking about this integrated team support, because that's what it should be. It's not like you have to go to one person. They're going to fix everything, but they're going to give you the resources based on a team of people that can really collectively help you. So I think that's incredible. And I also love that, you know, you talk about hearing someone's story and then validating the pieces of how they go together. That's exactly what we do as PTs, right? Oh, you're getting pain at this point. What are we doing during this point? And like in pointing out, you know, how that's all correlated, yep. whether it's stress or movement or whatever it may be. And so, you know, I'm so deeply relating to this, but I think also what I heard was, you know, pointing out some of these different things that are happening when someone has a baby or a child, and these things are popping up, right? And now as women are having children later in life, and it's kind of meshing with perimenopause. So how do we know, am I just postpartum and crazy, or am I perimenopause and crazy? Am I both? How does that?
Same. You are not crazy postpartum at all.
Whatever. But how are those starting to overlap, and what are some of the things that people can be looking out for, or ways that they can help themselves? I know that's kind of a loaded question.
No, but you bring up a good point. Having children later, or even like fertility treatments where your hormones were skyrocketed, and even when you're pregnant, they're so high, and then you have this dramatic crash. So for those women, I say get ready. That's what menopause is probably going to be like for you. However, I think, and I was victim, or not victim, I was guilty of this. When you're, especially postpartum, those progesterone levels really plummet. And progesterone is your well-being hormone. And I've just now started within the last year or two telling young moms, maybe you should take a little bit of progesterone to help, because it was up in, you know, 500 or whatever. And now it's in the toilet. And if you're nursing, it's even worse. I remember nursing, and I down there was like the Sahara Desert. I wish somebody had said, hey, you might want to try some vaginal estrogen. That's completely safe for you to take. And this will help you heal faster. So I think having validating maybe postpartum and knowing like that's hormone fluctuation, when you fast forward into your, for me, it was like 37, 38. I noticed my progesterone was a little bit low, and I was getting grumpy and low testosterone. So anywhere from that 35 to 45 up to 50 until you hit that magical, mythical place of 1 year with no period, those time frames, and especially with stress, cortisol levels, all of that stuff will fluctuate your hormones so much. And you may have some of these symptoms. So, you know, the sleeplessness, the weight gain. I love the apps that track your system, or you track your cycle, so that you can come back and be like, oh yeah, I am a mess sort of 1 week before my period. But you know what? I look forward to my second or third day of my bleed because I feel great. I'm like, you know what happens then is when your estrogen is increasing, or right before that week, that's when your progesterone plummets. How about we take progesterone for that week? So it's just sort of working, and you may not need it for years and years and years, but during that postpartum, perimenopause, sometimes they're blending together. Sometimes after a pregnancy, your body's just sort of like, okay, we're done now. And you're, you know, 35, 37. I saw a 50-year-old who went into menopause at 38. Just, you know, her eggs were done. And she's been on hormones ever since, but now we're optimizing her. So I think validating that postpartum, and my generation, I think, sort of toughed through. I'm older. I'm in my 50s, mid 50s. So we just toughed through that. And thank goodness now we're sort of with menopause. We're like, nope, we're not toughing out now. Mm-hmm. But the millennials and the younger ones are also getting into the perimenopause, which is great. And it's also very validating.
Right.
Definitely. And I think, I mean, we've kind of started to dive into the hormone replacement therapy conversation anyway. And you mentioned back in 2009, when you guys kind of started into this field, you were doing it almost under, you know, cloak and dagger because of the mentality, the broader mentality that the health industry had around using hormone replacement therapy. I mean, what do you think has changed so significantly since then? Is it just the research and just the data that we have now that is telling everybody, hey, this is safe and actually very beneficial?
Yes. And we have had the data. I think during COVID, well, so in late 2019, the study, the look back study at the Women's Health Initiative came out, but then it kind of got buried with all the COVID stuff. So I think once we got, say, mid summer of 2020, that's when people were sick of being at home. They were doing more research. They were starting their podcasts. And that's when information was sort of, people were home. They were sitting around waiting. But I think women got wise. They slowed down. They started taking care of themselves. And then they were like, wait a minute, this isn't great. What, we need to do something different. And then add on the podcast and the Instagram and the reels and people talking, and they're getting more information. It's being disseminated. And the rise in popularity of here are some solutions and some hope. So that just builds, it snowballs into things. And then you add in the celebrity component. Oprah's been on Bioidenticals for a really long time. I mean, she says it a lot of time. I need my creams. I know exactly what she's talking about. And then going back to even Suzanne Summers, who was a complete pioneer and I think got discredited a lot, but she made it accessible. You guys in California, you guys are ahead of yourself. Florida and California, you guys are trendsetters. I'm in really, really conservative Washington, D.C. So you have to have the studies. So yes, the studies are there. I think people are reading them. And if you haven't read Avram Bloom's book, Estrogen Matters, it's an amazing read. It is approachable for even people who are not in medicine. And it will make you very upset about how those decisions for that study went and how there were a lot of flaws. And we built, I mean, you can even go to men and testosterone. A lot of the flaws in the study way, way back have been refuted, but it takes decades to undo all that dogma. I had a patient yesterday who came in and said, oh, my practitioner said that perimenopause is a myth. I just, okay. I'm like, way to invalidate her feeling.
That's crazy, especially nowadays.
How old are they? And please tell me they're about to retire.
That's so crazy.
That's, you know, not to put my colleagues under the bus, but I'm like, the GYNs in my area, I'm like, are you not going to get continuing medical education? Because you cannot go to a conference without talking about this. And I get it. Yes, if you're at the twilight of your career, then just pass it on to a younger person in your practice that's ready to deal with it. But exactly. Certainly don't dismiss.
I mean, even just taking pelvic health classes, you know, for continuing education for PT, we are learning all about it and when we need to refer and who we're referring to and all of that. So it's crazy if MDs are not taking that same approach with things. But anyways, we don't have to talk about that. But understanding a little bit more about hormone replacement therapy, when we're talking about this, what exactly does that mean? And who is kind of a good candidate for hormone replacement therapy? Because we know that you talked about topicals, there's patches. So when do we know what kind we're going for and when we should be starting to think about implementing this? And then I know there's a lot, you know, based on, well, am I putting some on my face? Am I putting it vaginally? Am I putting it on, like, where am I supposed to put it? When am I supposed to start paying attention to this? What can you tell us about that?
So it is very personal and you need to be working with someone sort of who will not be cookie cutter, because I tell patients all the time, if you make a decision today about a modality of a medication, it is not a granite countertop. We can change it really easily. So that was always my big decision in my house, was like, what color, what's my granite countertop? So it's very customizable. I have patients say, well, I like a one weekly patch or twice a week patch, or I don't like patches. I'm allergic. I want cream. I have some people that do injectables. So it's very customizable. So when you start feeling a little bit different, when you notice changes, especially with the sleep, with the stress, ability, like juggling things, multitasking, snappy, depression, all those, that happens between 35 and 50. So just being aware, tracking your symptoms, talking with your friends. So you also can start certain things earlier. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing. So I sort of do the trickling effect. So usually sometimes it's some oral progesterone at the second half of their cycle just to help them sleep. Depends on their symptoms. It really does depend on symptoms. And then maybe if their libido is a little tanked, or they're just they're in the gym and they're not getting gains, or their joints are stiff, or you know they're having problems with intimacy, you can start, stop, try things, switch them out. There are so many options out there, but you just have to be willing to track your symptoms, talk, you know, and communicate what you're feeling. So I think even after 35. Vaginal estrogen, yes, everybody, twice a week, go ahead. If you don't like the goopy stuff, they have little suppositories. I love vaginal DHEA. It doesn't have to be the expensive prescription. You can just use little tablets. That works fine. And then, you know, of course, using lubrication and not being embarrassed about that, communicating, taking time, relaxing, easing into your intimate times. So it is going to happen. It's a guarantee. Your ovaries at some time are going to stop, and then they stop producing forever. So some people say, I want to do this naturally. Well, you're naturally getting estrogen until you don't. Replacing it is natural, like if you want to keep going. The reason why we feel like, oh, let's do it naturally, is because women are dead by the time they went to menopause, you know, 100 years ago. I had a patient yesterday. What did they do 100 years ago? We have so much at our disposal. I'm like, a lot of times they were dead. You know, we're living so much longer. So, but we want quality of life. We want to be able in our 50s, 60s, 70s. I have 80-year-old patients who are still on hormones, and they have a great intimate life. So that's a goal of mine. I want to be up running around with my grandkids, great grandkids, have mobility, have muscle mass, have my brain, and be able to enjoy life. So I think that was a long answer to say it's a continuum. It's different for everybody, but they need to be aware that there are answers. And have somebody to talk to.
1,000%.
And it was a long answer that prompted a few more questions that I have about this. One being about, you know, we're physical therapists. We talk about mobility, muscle mass, pain, bone health. How can optimizing somebody's hormones and using hormone replacement therapy help physiologically on the side of some of those physical things that you mentioned, specifically with movement, exercise, and pain?
Sure. Yeah, I think you guys have a unique perspective because you may see them often. Like, you know, you're seeing them a couple times a week, and then you get to know them, and then they're, you know, you can see subtle changes. Maybe they're losing weight, and you're like, well, let's do a body composition. You might be losing some muscle. So the big ones for me, the big and the obvious ones for women specifically, are estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. But there's also some lesser known hormones that I test: pregnenolone, DHEA, cortisol levels. All of those help. Frozen shoulder. There's a great, I'm sure you've seen the studies about frozen shoulder and menopause. And I think that specific symptom opened the eyes for a lot of women that, like, oh, that is something that estrogen fixes. That's in, you know, now, well, what else is there? If it's a shoulder, if it's my, you know, my scapula is not moving well, what else could estrogen help me with? So the big ones for me and estrogen and helping patients are the brain. So we do know Lisa Moscone has done great work on brain shrinkage without your estrogen. She's doing a ton of Alzheimer's research with estrogen preventing the lubrication. So when I was in oncology, we take women off of estrogen and we put on estrogen blockers. And one of the biggest complaints was my joints. So estrogen is a great lubrication hormone. And then keeping hot flashes at bay, weight maintenance. You need estrogen in order to tap into those fat cells and burn fat. So then progesterone helps you sleep, keeps you calm, keeps you from strangling your partner, yelling at your kids. And then it also builds bone. So estrogen keeps you from breaking bone down. Progesterone builds bone, and as does testosterone. So testosterone gets a bad rap with a lot of my colleagues, and they tell women, they scare them that they're going to grow a beard, their voice is going to get low, and they're going to lose all their hair. Not if you're monitoring symptoms and you're doing it reasonably. So for women, I say muscle mass. More muscle you have, more insulin sensitive you are, the better you're going to burn calories. Your mood, your brain, it helps with your brain also. Libido is there. And that's sort of the last thing I talk about. But muscle, bone mass, it builds bones, mobility, mood, and then libido. Same with, and then that's how I talk with men. Men often come in for the testosterone for libido, but I'm like, there's like 10 other things testosterone does for you. And by the way, you got that black box warning off. So now we know, which we've known for years, that it doesn't cause cardiovascular risk. It doesn't cause prostate cancer. So we know that it's safe, and it's also very safe for women. I tell patients there is no FDA-approved testosterone for women. However, that doesn't mean that we don't have tons of studies that show all the benefit. And in fact, we have studies on trans men who are born female on testosterone at 10 times the dose that I'm going to give you. And guess what? They don't die. They don't get heart attacks. They don't get breast cancer. So we have tons of research with safety for women at a measly 5 milligram doses, which is what's recommended. So I think those are the heavy hitters, the testosterone, progesterone, and estrogen. And then all the other stuff, DHEA, cortisol, ashwagandha for your adrenals. I have a very holistic approach to things. So I try to, it's not going to be one size fits all for everybody.
Mm-hmm. You brought up ashwagandha. So I'm just curious, are there like just some general supplements that you typically see that when people start adding in some things, it really helps? I mean, there's so many that are talked about on social media, right? From creatine to collagen to magnesium to, I mean, it keeps going. So which ones, and I know that this is personal and it's hard to talk in generalized ways, but are these all essential that we need to get in? Are they really doing the effects that people are claiming? And how important are, you know, adding additional supplements in?
So my feeling on supplements are, if you need them, then we use them. But I want you to know what food items you should be eating in order to get them also. So food is the best way to get most things. However, because of our food industry, and that's a whole nother podcast, a lot of the nutrients, a lot of the things, the apple I ate when I was 5 is not the same kind of apple that is out there now. So the nutrients are a little bit less. So, the heavy hitters are magnesium. I mean, everybody's talking about magnesium. There's magnesium in every little thing on my reels. So magnesium for me, glycinate for night and recovery. If you're having trouble going to the bathroom, and can do an oxide or a citrate. Do you need all these types? Maybe. It just depends on what you're doing. A magnesium 3-in-8 for headaches and for that repetitive thinking before you go to bed. And then I love ashwagandha for cortisol management, because adaptogens do just that. They adapt. Do you need a little bit more cortisol? Maybe. Okay, adaptogens will help, your ashwagandha will help with that, or it'll help lower. Most people need help lowering their cortisol. Things like vitamin C to, again, help your adrenals. I check iodine for your thyroid health and hair, ferritin, iron, hair, skin, nails, energy, vitamin D, huge, crucial thing that you're able to check and supplement if you need to. The creatine. So I do love creatine. I think if for some supplement, you have to just be really careful about where you're getting it. Right. I love creatine. I love, so I do a lot of gut testing, looking at your microbiome. Acromantia is a great probiotic. I like giving probiotics. I like giving inulin for, to help bulk up the stool if they're not going. I love fiber. I love, I'm just trying to think of all the things that I usually do. Berberine, a lot of times before a GLP-1, if patients are worried about weight, I'll start a berberine instead. And then it's all fundamentals. What are you eating? What are you doing? Are you sleeping? Exercising? All of that stuff. So that's a sort of a little rundown on
That was great.
Heavy hitters I have.
That was great.
And so, I mean, we've talked hormones a ton, and I know there's more that we want to get to, but are there any, you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but if somebody, say, went to somebody and feels like they got a cookie cutter hormone replacement therapy plan, what are the types of red flags that they should be watching out for, especially if they're doing this without consistent follow-up or consistent consultation with somebody? What are the types of red flags somebody might see that might help them understand, hey, this dose or this package of hormone replacement therapy that I'm on is not right for me?
As in any space, there's controversy about everything. So some people don't test, some people do test, some people only do saliva testing, some people only do urine testing, some people, so you'll find all comers. Some red flags that I see as a practitioner are if they're only giving you one modality. So, and I know pellets get a bad rap, but if they're only offering pellets and that's your only option, that to me is kind of a red flag, because pellets can be really great. I do them in my practice, but I would say it's a small percentage of my practice. You just have to be careful. If they're not offering you alternatives, if they're only saying you have to go compounded, if they're not saying, well, you can do a patch, but no, you have to do compounded. All of this is good and it's all very customizable, but if you're only offering one option, that's a red flag. The other thing is if you're feeling like a factory, if you're getting your treatment and you're getting scooted out, that to me is a red flag. That is just more of a money-making thing. And I'm not trying to throw practitioners under a bus because maybe they're just busy. But to me, I think that this takes time. I think it is very individualized. And I think that I also am very conscious of people's money and trying to use labs with their insurance or using medication that their insurance covers. Or I also don't like when if I come in with an idea like, hey, I'd like testosterone, I'm not doing that. Like, there's no discussion. There's complete dismissal. Or here, I brought this study and I don't know what that is and I don't want that. I'd like to have this test. I'd like to do, I mean, stuff that I do all the time. I want my ApoB tested, or I want my LP little a for cholesterol to see if I do need that statin. Those don't mean anything. So being sort of dismissive, does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are my red flags. Being dismissed and not being, I mean, if you're in healthcare, you are by nature, you should be curious. So if I have a patient that brings something in, I am okay saying, I've never heard of that. And we Google it right there, or I'll chat GPT with them. I think it's saying I don't know is okay.
Yeah.
Because you can't know everything.
Exactly. And so many practitioners see that as weakness. And I think that's the wrong mentality.
I know. Dom and I have unfortunately been in situations, like even through my miscarriage, where we're just trying to ask questions and find out more information. And
oh, man.
We got so much pushback.
I almost got kicked out of a room.
I'm the expert. You need to do what I say. And that's it.
Yes.
And it's so unfortunate, especially when women are going through traumatic events or body changes and trying to figure out what is going on in their life, and to be just completely dismissed, or this is the one way, this is it. This is, you know, it's so crazy to me. So I love your approach. I love that you're giving people permission to ask the questions, to do the research with your clinician, to want to understand your body more. That should be the goal for everyone. And, you know, as women go into more midlife, a lot of women complain about weight gain and doing all of the things and not being able to have it come off. And so now I think the surge is going a little bit more toward GLP-1s and getting some help in that area to feel like they're more connected to their body. And there is a lot of controversy about this. Is it good? Is it bad? Do we have long-term research? What does this mean for women? Can we talk about GLP-1 a little bit?
Sure. It's more common, but I have a little unique feeling or way that I get patients onto and maintain them on GLP-1. So I like the microdosing. One of the things that I feel has happened is we took a great medication for diabetics that brings that hemoglobin A1C down. There's a very stepwise approach for escalating treatment. And because of the demand, and it's a great thing, like these things are going to, they're not going anywhere. They're just going to get better. I mean, there's 8 to 9 in the pipeline. Retta is on its way. And that's looking at 3 different receptors. So these medications are not going away. Could they create longevity for patients? Absolutely. But we took a paradigm and a way of dosing, and we sort of put it on that weight loss, that diagnosis, where I think it just was a little bit too much too fast. So my patients, I usually get them started at a granular level at looking at everything else they're doing. Because if you are not eating right, exercising, and exercising differently, I try to get them off of that hamster wheel of running themselves ragged, running 20 miles a day, you know, that kind of stuff, and really doing less of that. If you need to go for a walk, go for a walk. I mean, that's going to be great. But if you need to start lifting heavy things too, so building muscle mass and resistance training, big shift in our thinking, because I grew up saying, oh, I just have to be on the treadmill and the Stairmaster, and then I have to do all this stuff different. So if you're not sleeping, if your cortisol is high, if you're angry, if you're depressed, you know, all that stuff is not under wraps, then the GLP-1 can help, but it's not going to be the best. So I traditionally will start my patients on a quarter of a starting dose, where they're taking, you know, a quarter of what typically they would get. And then we go from there. And if they're losing weight, great. I tell them, you know, they have to maintain that 120 grams of protein. They have to do 50 grams of fiber. They need to get, you know, make sure, take pictures of their plate. What are they doing? Working with a nutritionist, working with a health coach to get you all that stuff underway. And then we can start the medication. If all the side effects that people get, hair loss, nausea, constipation, diarrhea, feeling GERD, all that stuff, those happen at those higher doses, or if you're just too high for you. You know, this increases your insulin sensitivity. It gets things going. And so I always have them start super low. And if they're having success, they stay. I have patients that have lost 50, 60 pounds on a half of a starting dose. But they just have to be consistent. They have to be patient. And then, you know what? Their face doesn't sag. Their skin isn't saggy. They're not then going for a tummy tuck because their skin sags so much. And they feel better. They feel lighter. And they're instituting lifelong learning habits that change fundamentally the way they look and feel about food. But I do like, and we're finding so many other things that it's doing, decreasing inflammation. Mm-hmm. It's stopping that food chatter. Food anxiety isn't there. They can make better decisions. They can make better choices. They're actually cooking because they're not starving and they can sit down and think. They're having mindful eating. And then, you know, this all trickles down. Your kids watch all of this. They find, you know, they you're setting a really good example. Yeah. So that's sort of my philosophy with it. I think they're great tools, but it's not the tool, the only tool.
I think that's such a good thing to point out, because a lot of people will see others losing weight and just be like, oh, this is the quick fix. But like you pointed out, it's not meant to be a quick fix. It's meant to be a tool to assist along lifestyle changes and really implementing that. And that's the most important thing for me as well. When I hear someone going on a gym, okay, are you lifting? Are you like, how are you maintaining your protein and your eating? And the mental factor of it, right? We're in body dysmorphia. And so when you go back into, well, skinny is better and I need to be smaller, you know, the mental side of it does kind of scare me for people of needing to be smaller for a certain reason rather than just feeling more vibrant, more energy, and connected to the body in a different way. So that is something that still worries me for some people. But also, I wanted to ask, do people need to be on this forever? Or is it just the tool that gets them to where the weight, the goal is that they have, and then they can get off? Does the weight come back? How do you usually see that happen?
So my philosophy on this has changed a little bit. I used to say we will use it until you don't need it anymore and then back off and come off of it. I do have patients that will do that, especially if their habits have changed completely. I do think if it's you're on it for a shorter amount of time, say like 6 months, you're where you are, and you've created the good habits, my patients have success coming off of it. And maybe we put them on berberine after that, or we put them on probiotics that are, or some supplements that are helping upregulate that GLP-1 process. However, I think more and more studies are coming out that long-term use, and it's all about inflammation. So decreasing inflammation, you're going to live the longest. Whoever has the least amount of inflammation is going to live the longest. So decreasing that inflammation over time decreases your risk of cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, diabetes, all of those things. So I'll use my mom, and she's been vocal about this, so she's okay. I'll use my mom as an example. So we slowly escalated her dose. I think she went to like a 5 milligram dose. For those who don't know, it's like the second dose. 2.5 is starting, and I'm talking about Zepbound. 2.5 is your starting dose, and then we slowly went up to 5 milligrams. She lost weight. She's 80. So this is an older woman, lost weight, is happy with where she is. And now she's back down to 2.5. And then I'm probably going to bring her down to 1.25. So a half a starting dose. But the conversation we had recently was, I feel better than I did 20 years ago because my pain has decreased. And now she lost 30 pounds. For a 6 foot woman, that's not a ton. But it decreased, you know, her joint stiffness, but specifically her, like her feet. But overall, you can tell she's less inflamed. She sleeps better. She's not snoring as much. So that's a great thing. Her cholesterol numbers have come down. Her hemoglobin A1C is down. And this is someone who is 80. So I want her around for another 20 years, but I also want her to not be selfishly a burden to me, that she's going to be remaining independent. So the conversation was the other night, I think I'm going to stay on this medicine. Is there anything you can see that's going to cause a problem? And I said, as long as we decrease it and you're on this low dose, I think that the research is going to show that it is very effective in longevity and not only that, being active longer. There's a lot of retrospective studies or observational studies showing that women who have had breast cancer who are on these medications actually have less recurrence of their breast cancer. So that to me is less inflammation, less stimulation of the genes that turn on those things. And your body can actually fight what it's, you know, do its maintenance and cleanup that it needs to do every day. So yes, I think some people can come off and then maybe they're going on to an oral, but I think these are definitely here to stay and have some potential long-term benefit to chronic disease, which we are horrible in this country at treating.
Very true.
And physiologically, that kind of just checks out for me, because when we think about a lot of these long-term chronic illnesses, even when it comes to joint degeneration and pain, you know, there is a big metabolic component to it. And when we start losing our ability to manage our blood sugars, or, you know, we start losing that insulin sensitivity, something like this, like you said, it gets us back on that right track and might metabolically make us start to operate like we did 20 years ago, which doesn't surprise me that we start to feel a little bit more like we did 20 years ago. So I just, when my physiology brain starts cooking, that's like what I think about. And then the second thought I have is, okay, anything that changes us physiologically long term, if I stay on this medicine for 30 years, that's where I tend to have a concern. You know, a lot of the times we get all these front end benefits, or we start realizing, hey, there might be long term benefit to this. Do you think there could be any sort of, and I don't know if there's any research on this, it's a relatively new thing, so probably not robust research, but Do you think there could be any sort of dependencies or physiologic drift that people start to see after using it for decades?
Good question. Have no idea. You know, these medicines have been out for decades, though, for diabetes. So we do have that long term. But when you look at specifically diabetic patients who also are on these medicine, who also get lifestyle intervention changes, they do better. Because the data shows that, specifically with weight loss and diabetes, yes, their hemoglobin A1C comes down and stays down, but the weight gain begins to happen. But that's because they're using it as a, and I'm generalizing, but some people are like, I'm taking this so now I can eat whatever the heck I want, which is not right. You would be love the patient we saw in our practice who came in, was referred for PRP for their shoulder. So it was a musculoskeletal thing. I think he had either rotator cuff and labral or something like that. So my partner saw him and noticed, you know, he just asks general questions. How's your gut? How's this? And turns out like his gut was a mess. And he came to us as a second opinion because he was about to have surgery and he just wanted to see if there was a non-surgical option. So in our clinic, we do platelet-rich plasma, which is where they draw your blood, spin it, and put it back into to help heal and decrease the inflammation right where you have the tear or the ligament problem. After questioning him, figuring out his gut's a mess, we found out he had a bunch of, H. pylori, which is very inflammatory. He had some autoimmune diseases that we helped decrease, and his gut in general was a mess. So once we fixed his gut, not only did his shoulder feel better, he still needed the PRP, but had he done the surgery without fixing all the underlying causes and the inflammation that's there and continues to be there, he's like, I could do your PRP, but you're going to be fine for 2 months and then it's going to hurt. Why don't I fix everything and then you're going to be good to go? That's how functional medicine works. We sort of get to, okay, you have this problem, you have ankle pain, you have a headache, or you have breast tenderness, but why? Let's just not give you something to fix that. Like, we got to fix the underlying problem, and you still may need the surgery. You still may need that, but then you're going to recover faster and you're not going to have another problem.
And it's just a testament to show and a great case study example in how generalized inflammation in the body that might be centralized in the gut can impact our pain. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when Jen and I started saying that around our colleagues or even early in our career with younger PTs, they're just like, what are you talking about? Gut issues are going to affect their shoulder pain. And it just wouldn't connect. And that has never made sense to me how people don't connect. Like, if you're having a lot of inflammation that causes generalized or systemic inflammation, it's going to affect pain, especially if there's a localized shoulder or knee or foot problem. And so that's where these practices that view people more holistically are so ahead of the curve in treating pain disorders.
Right.
Yeah. You can put a Band-Aid on it, but it's not going to fix it.
Right.
Definitely.
And being able to, again, refer to who is needed within the circle of support is so crucial. And I love that you're really taking the care and the time to do that with patients. Now, where can someone learn more information from you? Potentially, do you have a virtual option that people can work with you? Where could people find you to learn more?
So my Instagram is just my name, Jennifer Galarson. We see patients in the DMV area, which is DC, Maryland, and Virginia. I have patients come from out of town to see me in practice. My website, yourbestlifewithjennifer.com, is offering a virtual sort of a health wellness advocate. I don't want to say I'm a health coach. I can look at your labs. I can tell you what labs to get. I can work with you to try and find a practitioner in your area that is willing to prescribe a touch base for patients who are already on treatment that maybe want to optimize, but they can contact me and work with me virtually from anywhere. So I find that that's a better way to like get out to more people. I also see people locally. So it's the best of both worlds.
Perfect.
Yeah. And an amazing option for, especially with these virtual options coming up, people who might be in rural areas, people who might have only two or three practitioners at their disposal that they know very well because they're the only ones they see. A great option to be able to get on a call with somebody who's going to look at you holistically, look at you as a whole person, hear your story, and do all the amazing things that we've talked about. Treat somebody the way that Jen and I ideally think somebody needs to be viewed. So Jennifer, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your expertise. I know that Jen and I could talk with you for hours longer about all of this stuff, but we won't subject the rest of the audience to that. But we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity to reach your audience. You guys are great.
What an incredible episode with Jennifer. If you heard something that you know there's a woman in your life that can benefit from hearing something that she said, even if it was just the smallest thing, please pass this episode along. This is how we get the information out. It's not just us putting it out, but it's truly because of you guys, and we appreciate it so much. If you haven't yet, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast. It helps because so many other people can learn about their bodies in these incredible ways from not only the guests, but also the PT pearls that Dom and I come out with ourselves. And of course, we hope to see you back on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.